We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Bronx Pinstripe Show number 24. Last week, we called our show Ref Snyder Has Arrived, and 1 week later, Ref Snyder has gone back down. So I think for Scott, it's been a rough 12 hours for you, right? You've been doing a lot of driving and then find out Ref Snyder news. How you doing?
I'm tired. This is show 24, which is kind of ironic, I'd say, since we're talking about our new second baseman being sent down and then Robbie Cano, having a pretty good series, or at least in the second game. Yes, I'm very disappointed, though. I'm very disappointed that Ref Snyder's not on the team any longer. Hopefully it's a short-term thing, but I've been driving for the past couple of days on my family is in, we're in Florida right now on a vacation, and my wife and I decided to drive it. So, I've been sucking back on a few beers since I got here just to kind of numb the pain of driving, you know, for on 95 for hours upon hours upon hours. But I'm ready to go, baby. You know, we took two of three. So good start to the second half.
I think the longest trip I've done in a car was from school in Vermont down to Philadelphia, and we just hit like hours of traffic. I think it took us like 12 hours or something nuts to get down there. And then I told myself, never again am I spending that long in a car. So I don't even know how the hell, and I know you're only coming from Virginia, but still, that's a long way down to Florida.
Oh, I torture myself a lot. I'm in the car. I prefer driving. I don't know. I just like having a vehicle wherever I go. So like I'm up and back to Virginia and New York, like it seems like, you know, two or three times a month now. And I'll never forget the longest trip. One of the longest trips I had when I was in school, we would go from Jersey to Old Dominion, where I went to college in Norfolk, Virginia. And it was around Christmas. And we went 95, which is, I never took 95 after that. And I think it took us like 16 hours. It took us like 7 hours to get from Baltimore or from DC to Baltimore. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. And that's like a 45-minute drive normally.
Yeah.
Right?
It's stupid. It was unbelievable. But, I have some very vivid childhood memories from driving down. I grew up in Ridgewood, New Jersey in Bergen County. And we would always take the old school station wagon, like the old school Buick station wagon, like straight out of Vacation, Chevy Chase style. And we would drive down, my brother, sister, and my mother would drive down to Vero Beach, Florida every summer. So we would always do that really long drive. I mean, I remember this thing, like it was an old school station wagon. My mom would literally at some point, I don't even know what was going on, like the starter or something was wrong. But we had a stick that she would like take the stick out of the trunk or out of like the third seat and go open the hood and like bang on something. And then the car would start and we'd keep going.
That sounds like it's a foolproof plan.
Yeah, it was a good childhood memory of road trip, but we did it every single summer. So
I like that. I like that move. When something's broken, just whack it or
smack it.
Yeah. Just keep beating it until it works or breaks.
Yeah. It's like an old Nintendo. You just got to smack the hell out of it until it works again.
Or you just blow in the cartridge because that works
the cartridge
every
yep.
single time.
Yep, that's right. That's right.
So it's only been three games this week, but I feel like there's been a lot going on. Obviously, Home Run Derby and All-Star Game. Did you watch it?
I did. It was, you know, we're going to talk, I think, about the Derby itself. I think the Derby was actually more exciting than the game this year. The new format of the Derby, I thought was... no pun intended, but a home run. I think they hit it on the head, right? They did a really good job.
And they got kind of lucky with it, though.
How do you say they got lucky? Well, because of...
So they had the new format going in, the timed rounds, but they were supposed to be 5 minutes each. But because there was weather concerns, they bumped it down to 4 minutes each. And instead of stopping it every home run in the last minute, they just added a 30-second bonus round after your time is up, almost like extra time in soccer. So it really made everything go quicker. And I think for something like a home run derby, you get in and out of there in 2 hours, and then it's exciting. But if you're dragging it out for 3 hours, I think it would have kind of lost some of the momentum.
Yeah, so I didn't even catch that, actually, because I came to I think I caught it starting in the second round. So I missed the delay and everything. I was kind of fortunate they were still going. I had a softball game or something that night. I didn't even know that they did that. I just saw the 30-second. I thought that was part of the new format. So that is interesting. But it worked really well. And the 30-second ending was awesome. Like, it was a cool extra time thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, I can't remember the last time baseball has made like a rule change to anything, even as, you know, as meaningless as the home run derby, but and it for it to be that successful. So I thought overall this was probably one of the most memorable All-Star weeks since maybe, I don't know, I mean,
Yankee Stadium,
since Yankee Stadium won, yeah. or the one before that was probably the one at Fenway when Maguire was hitting moon balls over the Mass Pike. You know, those are like the things that stick out in my mind.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite All-Star moments was when Josh Hamilton just went bonkers in Yankee Stadium. And like, all I did was the next day, I'm just like, can we please get this guy in pinstripes somehow? Get this guy in pinstripes. All I wanted was Josh. He was one of my favorite players beforehand, just because I kind of, when I look at him as an athlete, I'm enamored by the way, or, you know, not right now because he's been hurt and obviously with the whole drug thing, but he's just such a freak of an athlete because he's a massive human being and he's just so athletic that he's fun to watch when he's on his game. So that was a real special one for me.
Absolutely. And, you know, about the All-Star game, like you said, the home run derby kind of overshadowed it this year. And I totally agree.
Yeah.
But can baseball stop, you know, with these 45-minute, you know, on-field ceremonies before every All-Star game? I mean, it's great to see the past legends and everything, but they roll them out for every chance they get. And it's like the game is supposed to start at 8 o'clock, and it's not starting until 8:45 because they did, like, the franchise four for every franchise. And then they had to announce everybody, you know, who was in the game and everything. Start that crap at 7 o'clock and just get the game going. It's just kind of, like, lost momentum for me.
Well, I mean, I'll give you the fact that they start too late. I think that's one of the big issues, because I actually like the fact that they have a lot of the history of baseball, because I think baseball is probably, of the big four sports, you know, baseball is obviously the one that you really relish history and the numbers. Like, they're so important. That's why, like, the whole steroid era was such a scar on the sport. So I think that the history and the players of the past in baseball are just extremely important to, you know, the fabric of the game. And I think it's important for them to roll them out, especially for the younger fans, so that they can see who these guys are. And you know, with today's day and age and the attention spans where they are and, like, everything is so instant, I think it is important actually still to roll these guys out there and make sure that they're, you know, that they're in front of the new fans as well. So I do wish they started earlier, though.
Yeah, so, I mean, I love seeing the historic guys as well. I mean, to see Willie Mays out there, I mean, it's still great. But, you know, they talk about these four living legends that were out there. It was Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Sandy Koufax, and Johnny Bench. I mean, four of the all-time greatest players of all time. But I understand baseball is trying to sweep the steroid era under the rug, but how can you look, like, people in the eye and say Barry Bonds or Ken Griffey Jr. is not one of the four living legends, or not one of the living legends of baseball? I mean, those are two of the greatest baseball players I've ever seen and probably ever will see, steroids or no steroids.
Well, I mean, you answered your own question. I think it is the steroids. And even the fact that Griffey was never even remotely attached to anything, he was still playing in that era. But I still don't put, like, Griffey with, like, some of those, like, the top guys. And
you're telling me Griffey's not as good as Johnny Bench?
Well, I can't wing off their stats right now. I'm not going to talk to, like, their stats right now, because – and you're comparing a center fielder and a catcher. I think they're two different things. And I think Johnny Bench was such a fabric of that team for such a long time. But, like, there's other guys that you miss. Like, where's Yogi in that? Why is Yogi not on that list? I think Yogi should absolutely be on that list if you're going to talk about – but again, then you're splitting hairs. You're talking about four people. And, like, you're going to ask 100 people, and 100 people have different opinions of their four people. So,
of course.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're splitting hairs with that type of thing. But, you know, it's like, think about the way that they started this game. And then they do this with all sports now. Like, what about the Women's World Cup? That thing I thought was supposed to start at 5 o'clock. Then they, as soon as I tune in at 5 o'clock, they have a 2-hour countdown. I'm like, what the? What am I supposed to listen to? Pregame on women's soccer for 2 hours? Are you crazy?
Yeah, but at least you know soccer's over in 90 minutes no matter what.
Yeah, well, I still don't know how much extra time they put on, which I still don't understand that. Like, it's just like they just randomly put random time at the end.
Yeah.
That's another thing. But anyway, so but the players, like, I wish they'd started a little earlier. But, I mean, I'm a fan of them bringing them out because, you know, I think history is such a big part of the sport. And I like seeing those guys out there. So I wish Yogi was part of that, though, because he is, to me, you know, one of the all-time greats.
And I like what Manfred and his staff has been doing. I think they've made, in his short time as commissioner, have been making some good moves to actually make some positive changes to the game. The Home Run Derby is an example. So, you know, I really can't say anything negative about the whole week overall, which is pretty rare for me. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, you like to shine the negative. I mean, they're there. no, but yeah, and you know, he brought Pete Rose back in Cincinnati, which I thought was a great move. I know people some people have very different opinions on Pete Rose and you know, what his contribution and participation in baseball should be at this point, if he should come back or if he shouldn't. I personally think he should be back. I think what he did on the field should stand alone to the things that happen outside the game and what he did for the game.
It's not outside the game, though. We disagree on this. I mean, we didn't.
We even, do disagree.
I didn't even ask you about this earlier, but clearly we disagree on this. What he gambling on the game is not outside of the game.
Well, as a player, and you're, I don't want to get into a whole Pete Rose discussion because I think it could go forever. But you know what he did on the field. That was just so good. I mean, he's one of the greatest players that ever played the game, hands down, hands down. And the way he played the game was not in a positive way, not affected. Anyway, whatever. It was. I thought it was cool to see him back, especially that it was in Cincinnati. I thought that was a good move. And you know, you could tell that he was just. I don't like his hair anymore. He needs to stop coloring his hair.
Dude, he needs to stop putting that jet black dye in his hair. Like, dude, you're old. We know you're old.
Embrace it. Yeah, embrace it,
like,
man.
It's okay.
Wrong with it. Yeah. Like, we don't need, you know, Hair Club for Men or whatever it's called. Like, dude, just go natural.
Yeah.
It was weird looking. But, yeah, I thought it was cool to see him out there.
Okay, last thing I'll say about Pete Rose, and this actually ties into the steroid thing, too. I would be all for I actually want these guys to be in the Hall of Fame, but they need to be described for what they were. You know, there was an era where there were steroids and Pete Rose gambled on baseball. Why can't they include that in the Hall of Fame? Isn't the Hall of Fame a museum? Aren't you supposed to like tell the facts of what happened? So,
well, they do, because they have fabrics of these guys, like Barry Bonds' bats there, Pete Rose, like some of the bases that he stole or the hits for when he got those final hits. Those things, those pieces of memorabilia actually are in the Hall of Fame.
So they should
they
be in
talk
the Hall
about
of Fame
it.
Too.
They just don't have busts there. Yeah. They don't have plaques.
Yeah. I mean, they should be, but they should also be, you know, described for what they were, just like any other negative time in history is in a museum. Anyway, you're right. We don't need to get into this. We got other stuff to talk about. One other thing that happened this week when there was no sports going on was the ESPYs, and two Yankees or ex-Yankees of note were there, A-Rod and Jeter.
Yeah, and Jeter just looking dapper as he always is. The man just he can do no wrong at this point. You know, it's always good to see him, and I feel like Yankee fans just go crazy when they see him out in public now. It's just it's like seeing the Pope, you know.
Yeah, it's like seeing the white whale. It's like you don't know when he's gonna appear, but when he does, you gotta watch.
Yep. And then A-Rod, I know, I think we kind of were you know, DMing each other when this was going down, but like I thought the A-Rod skit was so stupid. I just thought it just should have been left out. I didn't think it was done well at all. Like, I think the whole premise behind it was dumb. I just to me, it's like, you know, I've been complimenting him all year, and I'm not going to say anything bad because I just think it was a dumb thing. Personally, like, I don't really care one way or another about it. I just think it should have been left out, and very easily could have been left out, because it did nothing for anybody. It just wasn't funny. There was nothing about it that was good, in my opinion.
It definitely was not funny. It was supposed to be funny, and it wasn't. So, you know, you can criticize not A-Rod, because he didn't write it. You can criticize A-Rod.
He signed off on
judgment.
It. He signed off on the writing.
You can criticize him for participating in it. But I think the fact that he was acknowledging, he was making fun of himself. He recognizes the fact that he has things to apologize for, like doing steroids and being suspended from baseball and lying and all the crap that happened over the last few years. He needs to apologize for. And he was kind of poking fun at himself, apologizing for everything else except that, which I actually think is in line with A-Rod this year of sort of, you know, becoming a new person and actually changing his ways instead of just doing same old A-Rod stuff.
But that's the thing. Like, to me, what that whole skit is doing is kind of making light of the situation. And the people that are
but that's a step in the right direction.
I totally disagree. I think it's making light of the situation of like saying, hey, it's not that it's a lighthearted situation when it's not. It's very serious to a lot of people. And I think that's what is going to rub even more people along. It's a little bit arrogant. And I think him stepping in the background, attending them, sitting with Jeter would have been awesome. But him getting on the forefront was, to me, actually his old ways. Hey, I'm here. I want some attention. Look at me. I'm going to do something that's out of the ordinary and stick out like a sore thumb. That's what I saw. That's the way I took that. And he's been sitting in the background doing his job, shutting his mouth all season long. Just keep doing that. It's working. Don't do something. Stop trying to stick out. I didn't agree with the move at all.
You just don't like A-Rod.
I don't look. You know my opinion on A-Rod. Everybody who listens to this show knows my opinion on A-Rod. But I've said time and time again, I respect the way that he's handled himself this year. I do. I don't respect what he's done in the past, but I respect him the way he handles himself this year. I really do. I think he's done a terrific job. I think this was just a little thing. But again, like I said, I don't think it's serious at all. Like I forgot about it. I just thought it was dumb when I was watching it.
Well, just like the rest of the ESPYs, you forgot about it because that's what the ESPYs is. So it's a time when you're not supposed to be taking things too seriously. After all, we're talking about sports here. So I had no problem with A-Rod being there and doing what he did. And again, it was good to see Jeter in his patented now suit with white shirt, no tie, unbuttoned. I think that's like his go-to look now, if you haven't noticed.
Oh, yeah. He's just like, I'm not going to wear a tie because I'm retired and I look sweet as hell.
Yeah, he's got that beach glow.
Yeah. Oh, dude, he's killing it. He's killing it. His teeth are like whiter than they've ever been. He's got a tan. He's got, you know, one of the most beautiful women on his arm now, and like he doesn't ever. I mean, he always had that. But
did you see his red like carpet? Did you see his red carpet interview?
I did not see his red carpet interview.
So he was asked if he misses baseball at all, and he was like, "No, not at all. In fact, I haven't really watched any baseball this year."
Yeah, he's been saying that. He's saying that a bit actually. He's definitely enjoying the retired life. He's definitely taking it all in. So good for him. He deserves it.
Yeah. All right. So you ready to get a little mad?
Let's talk.
So everyone by now probably knows the Ref Snyder news that he was optioned back to AAA to make room for, in reality, Brendan Ryan. I know it was for Carlos Beltran today. We're recording on Sunday night. But really, it was for Brendan Ryan as the backup infielder. We'll get into everything in a minute, but first I think we want to read a mailbag from somebody we got just this afternoon when the news came, right?
Yeah. So this is from Nolan on Twitter. I'm sorry, Nolan, we didn't get your Twitter handle. So guys, if you're leaving mailbags on the website, please also put your Twitter handle in the body of your message because sometimes it's acting a little funny. So this is what Nolan had to say. Optioning Ref Snyder proves Cashman and the rest of the front office are not remotely focused on the future of this team. His constant love for 35-year-old veterans is appalling, and the fact that the Yankees chose two horribly incompetent second basemen is jaw-dropping. Somebody deserves to be fired. Thanks, Nolan. Appreciate you writing in, and obviously we're fired up when this news broke. I think Andrew and I are both on similar pages with the whole Ref Snyder news. So
definitely love the passion there, and I think a lot of people felt that way too. I was in New York this weekend. We'll get into that later. I was at Friday night's game, but I was waiting for a table for brunch late this morning, and all of a sudden I see Twitter blowing up that Ref Snyder was sent down, and it just immediately sort of just put a damper on my day, because even though he hadn't, you know, he was, you know, 2-for-12 or whatever it was when he was up, it was still exciting to see him out there, and I think it was something we all wanted to see. And to choose, essentially, Brendan Ryan, who has not been on the team all year because he's been injured, so he hasn't helped the team all year, and they are in first place without Brendan Ryan as your backup infielder, to choose him over Ref Snyder just makes no friggin' sense to me. I can't wrap my brain around this move.
Well, the other thing about it is that he's choosing Steven Drew over Ref Snyder as well as the starter, because Ref Snyder's not going to be a backup, right? So he's also making that choice.
Yes.
So there are two choices in this pyramid or this threesome. And Brendan Ryan, it just goes back. I mean, Nolan's absolutely right. Girardi is enamored with veterans. He loves his veterans, especially defensive-minded. It's like he loves himself because that's what he was, right? He was like the defensive backup for a long time, and that was like his role. So like he relates to those guys and always, it seems like, kind of, you know, teeters on that side for those guys. And it's frustrating seeing 180 Stephen Drew, maybe lower than that by now, but, you know, seeing him getting basically, you know, a head nod for starting second base again.
Yeah, it was four games he didn't start, the two before the All-Star break and then the two after the All-Star break. Rest Snyder started all those games, and again, while the stats might not be eye-popping, I think he really provided something to the team. And being at the game on Friday night, something I noticed, he was playing a pretty good second base. He made some tough plays, he needed to make some tough throws, and he made them all. And it was something that I didn't expect him to do, because that was the whole knock on him, right? That his defense was pretty bad and needed to improve. But he showed he could handle at least defense on the major league level, and you had to have think the offense will eventually come. So if he's going to be playing defense, you know, at least average or above average, there's no possible need for Stephen Drew to be starting second base.
No, I agree. And he made kind of a ridiculous play, a backhand. I think it was Friday night. That backhand, it was a backhand toss. He was coming. He was charging a ball and made the backhand toss, and it actually went over the runner's right shoulder. To Didi at short. It was a crazy play, like that nobody would have made.
Yeah, I was sitting down the right field line, in the middle section at the game that night, sort of halfway between the foul pole and first base, so mid right field. And when that ball was hit, I saw Ref Snyder charging. I was thinking in my head, just make the sure out at first, you know, don't try and be a hero here. He tried to be a hero and he got the play done, and it's sort of, you know, it got me out of my seat cheering for him, because it was a great play.
Well, it was one of those like no, oh yes, I can't believe you got that. Like, I can't believe that ball actually went through. But yeah, you know, if he makes that play 10 out of 10 times and he has a decision, I want, honestly, I would rather him 9 out of 10 times to go to first, because that play that he made was, I think, a little lucky as well. But it shows his athleticism as well. It shows how athletic the kid is, and
he's not hesitant.
He does have some instincts. No, yeah. he did it immediately. Absolutely. So, yeah, I agree with that. If he's playing average second base, which Stephen Drew kind of is, he's middle in the pack, defensive second baseman right now. There's no reason for him, because that bat's going to come alive. I mean, he hits every level. So, and not to mention, he just sparks the team. He's more athletic. He's faster. He's, you know,
every time he came to the plate on Friday night, it got the whole place cheering.
I know. And that's something, because getting the crowd in Yankee Stadium going, to me, is important in home games. And he just shows it's so frustrating just talking about this.
You think
and
people are going to be on their feet cheering to hear Stephen Drew called up to the plate?
No, they're going to be booing. They're going to be, because we're all sick and tired of seeing him get one big hit and then go 1 for 27 after that. And it happens every single time. That's what this dude does. He goes 1 for 27 in batches.
So here's what I would like. I'd say cut Brendan Ryan, because really, what's the difference? He hasn't been here all year. You cut him.
Right.
You didn't lose anything there. Have Ref Snyder be the starting second baseman, and Stephen Drew can be the utility guy for second and short. And I understand if you want to play Stephen Drew, like, for instance, in a game like today against Felix Hernandez, a nasty right-hander. Okay, you don't want to throw out Ref Snyder, a rookie, against probably the best right-hander in baseball. I totally understand that. You know, give him a day off there. But he should be playing every time against lefties and against most right-handed players. That can be five times a week. And that's a full-time role. Why can't he just be that?
I have no idea. I want to hear the reasonings why. I mean, Cashman was saying that they wanted options going into the trade deadline. So we'll see what happens at the trade deadline. But this kid needs to be back up. I mean, I know how many Yankee fans are disappointed when they saw that, because everybody was pumped up. And just to see him get such a small sample size and, to me, not really given a shot. You know, he got his legs cut out from under him, in my opinion.
Can you explain to me what having Stephen Drew and Brendan Ryan on the roster does for options going into the trade deadline?
No, I don't get it. I mean, I know Girardi likes flexibility, so those two guys can play multiple positions, and Ref Snyder's a one-position guy right now. So that's the only thing I could think of, and the fact that they have options, I don't know. I'm defending something I can't stand, so I don't even want to defend it anymore. I totally agree. I think Brendan Ryan should be should be off the team. And I don't mind Steven Drew in that role. I think, you know, he's got flexibility as a defensive late inning guy at short and second. And I think he could even play a little third. And then he's got pop, you know, he's got pop where he can hit late in games. If you need a big home run or if you need an extra base hit, he's got some pop that's not a bad pinch hit situation too. So,
yeah, I mean,
I don't get it.
I would be fine if you had to have a spot start for Drew at third or something. I feel confident that he could play an adequate third base.
Yeah, absolutely. I do too. I agree. So,
all right.
I hate the move. I hate it.
That's enough bitching about the ref center move. Do you feel any better? Do you feel like you got something off your chest there?
No, because he's not going to be at second base tomorrow. That's what's going to piss me off.
Some other moves that went down this week. We just mentioned the Brendan Ryan thing, but Gregorio Petit was optioned back to AAA for that. Other call-ups were Brandon Pinder was called up, and Brian Mitchell, who had been with the team for a little while, was sent down. The reason for this is because they said they wanted to stretch Mitchell back out. He had mainly been being used in the majors as a short-inning guy, but he's a starter. And I think they want to see where he can progress as a starter, and having him pitch out of the bullpen 1 or 2 days a week was not really helping that progression. So they sent him back down to AAA to get some starts.
Yeah, and a note on him too is I think he's going to be one of the guys that very well could be moved as well. I think we're not going after some of the top line trade baits like a Cueto or you know, going after Samardzija or somebody like that. I think Brian Mitchell will be, you know, he's a good prospect, but he's not a top prospect. He's got a live arm and he's more valuable as a starter. So I think they're going to show that value to maybe entice some things at the trade deadline too. So I think that's part of the move.
You could sell him to a team as a really high upside guy with good stuff.
Right.
And a team will accept him, you know, but you're right, not as a top prospect, as a high upside mid-level prospect guy. And exactly. As the Yankees, you don't mind giving up a guy like that for somebody who will help you this year trying to get into the playoffs and hopefully win a championship.
Right, no doubt about it. So I think that was a big part of that move as well.
Last move of the week was Gary Sanchez was promoted to AAA because Austin Romine had a little bit of a thumb injury, and Romine was actually having a good year. He made the All-Star team for AAA. But Sanchez was called up from AA and in his first at-bat hit a home run.
Yeah, good for him. I mean, it seems like we have a lot of guys now lined up in AAA. It seems, you know, like a lot of the AA guys that we've been looking at, there's a couple still down there, but the majority of them are up in AAA now. So that means they're one short step away from the bigs. And, you know, the level of competition for these guys is upped, obviously, because they're at a higher level now. So we can kind of see a little bit more of what they have. And talking about Romine too. Romine's a guy that, you know, he never really he was always known for more of a defensive catcher. But you know, he's hitting high 260s, 270 this year. He's had a great year, and this is a guy that was released and then signed back in the offseason. So, you know, good for Romine. Hopefully, he can come back from that thumb injury. But you know, again, Gary Sanchez is a guy I would also key in on and take a look at because I think he is part of some of these packages that might be getting shopped at the deadline.
Totally agree with that. He's the most attractive catcher as far as trade bait in the system that they have.
Yeah, and I think he's probably the top guy that we're willing to give up from everything we're hearing. I think he's one of the top guys that we're willing to give up because, you know, I think we've talked about this in the past, but I don't see them giving up Severino, Judge, or Ref Snyder. Well, shit, maybe Ref Snyder now. Who knows with Ref Snyder? I don't even know what they think about this guy anymore.
So I was listening to one of the Buster Only podcasts. I don't know if you ever listened to that, but he was talking about he had a guy on talking about prospects. And the guy said that the two untouchables in the Yankee system were Judge and Severino. He did not mention Ref Snyder.
Yeah, and I agree with that. Just because there's nobody has a finger on the pulse with Ref Snyder right now because of what they've been... You know, what they've been doing with him and just kind of the way they talk about him. And they just don't – I feel like the Yankees don't feel like he's ready. For some reason, they feel that way. So, it makes a lot of sense. And that's kind of what I'm thinking too. I think those two guys are untouchable.
All right. You want to get into a recap of the weekend series?
Yeah, let's do it.
So the Yankees are 50-41, first team in the division to get to 50 wins. They're 9 games over .500. They'll be going for 10 over 500 on Monday night, which is good. That's sort of one of those mini milestones that you sort of strive for in the season. And they're 4 up on Baltimore. So they're actually putting a little distance between themselves and this division, which we didn't think was going to happen.
We didn't think any of this was going to happen. Let's talk about that. The fact that we have a chance of getting 10 games above 500, that's phenomenal for where we, you know, we thought this this team was going to be, and a lot of people thought this team was going to be. And I thought they were going to be good. I think they were going to be at this point during the season, you know, four almost five games up. So, yeah, no, that's very good news. Definitely trending in the right direction with another series win too. Yep. Hopefully, you know, this weekend.
Now, I was just going to say that their fifth series win in a row, and it's, you know, we kept talking about how streaky this team was. They would go on, you know, 9 out of 10 game winning streaks, and then they'd go 2-8 in their next 10. It's like, you know, where's the middle ground with this team? And you win, you know, 2 out of 3 games. That's a pretty damn good season. 600, you know, plus winning percentage, and that's what they're doing right now.
Yeah, I'll take it all day. You know, the past two shows that you and I have been talking about, the Yankees have stayed relatively consistent, and it's like they've turned a corner with the inconsistent play, and they've really kind of found their happy medium. We're getting good pitching, and the bats are, you know, we're definitely hitting for more average now, and I think that's a big part of it. I think we're getting that's part of, like, you know, discontinuing the streaky play, is that we're not completely living and dying by the home run ball.
This weekend, you know, a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it's definitely still happening, don't get me wrong, but we are hitting for a higher average as a team, I think, over the past few weeks.
So Friday night, they won 4-3. Tanaka started. It was the first game after the break. Tanaka was good except for two pitches to Kyle Seager, which he missed location, and Seager hit two home runs. But his final line was 7 innings, 5 hits. Those 3 earned runs came off all of the home runs on Seager, and he had 7 strikeouts. He worked out of a bases-loaded jam in the second. So, you know, not a dominant start, but solid.
Yeah, no, again, that's good to see him, come back out. 7 strikeouts. I like it. 7 innings pitched. So he got deep in the game. You know, only 5 hits. So yeah, a positive outing. And, you know, Seattle overall is not a great lineup, but they do have two of the most, the scariest hitters in baseball, I'd say, with Cano. I mean, Cano's not having a great season, but you know what he is. We all know what he is. He's a terrific hitter. He's one of the best hitters in baseball, in my opinion. And then Nelson Cruz, who's just been unconscious for the past 2 years. So, you know, while the lineup isn't as strong, and then Seager obviously had the best of him in that particular game. So, but yeah, he did well, and it was good to see him come back out and give another quality start.
You know who else I like in that Seattle lineup who's having kind of a bounce-back year is Trumbo. He used to be with the Angels.
Yep.
He sort of seems like he's turned his career around a little bit. I mean, his numbers aren't eye-popping, but he had a couple hits this weekend, and I sort of forgot about Trumbo, and then all of a sudden he popped back up on the radar with Seattle.
Well, he got hidden last year in Arizona. Was he in Arizona last year?
I don't even remember.
I think he was. I think he got dealt to Arizona at some point. He might have been there for 2 years, actually. But it seems like I don't know what his numbers are, but he was always with the Angels. I thought he was going to come up and be a really good player.
I mean, he made the All-Star team a couple years ago.
Yeah, and he has tremendous power, too. And he was one of those guys. On Friday, I was listening to the game on Saturday on the radio a little bit as well, and John Sterling and Susan Waldman were talking about Trumbo in particular, about how when they saw him with the Angels coming up, that they really thought he was going to be a good player, and, you know, he wasn't striking out a lot, making a lot of contact. And I think this conversation was going on when he had an 11-pitch at-bat on Saturday, so against Pineda.
Yeah. All right, well, last thing from Friday night is A-Rod had the big hit in the seventh inning. Stadium went wild for it. I mean, I don't know. I'm running out of things to say about A-Rod.
Oh, dude, it's on the field. It's tremendous. It's ridiculous what he's been doing. So, yeah, I mean, it was a huge home run. And I think a lot of people, including me, have talked about A-Rod with his home runs coming late in games or in blowouts, late in games when the games are either out of reach or we have a big lead. So seeing him in a big situation like that, but he's been doing it all year, too. So get a huge home run is awesome.
Yep. So if you date from Friday night back through the 4 games previous to that, so including the 3 games in Boston, he had a go-ahead RBI in each of those games.
Awesome. That's so good. I mean, who the hell thought we were going to be talking about him in this regard after the All-Star break? It's crazy. So good for him, man. He's doing a good job, and he's really helping this team. We wouldn't be here without him.
And Betances and Miller closed the door on Friday night. Tanaka to Betances to Miller is pretty much how you draw up.
Oh, game over, dude. I mean, that's awesome. That's what we want. And, you know, having Betances and Miller in the back end is just such a huge, huge, huge win for this team. Every time they come out, you're expecting a W. So watch out later in the season, man. That's lethal.
All right, Saturday afternoon did not go as well, and Cano pretty much stole the show that day.
Yeah, two home runs off Pineda. That was the one I was listening to in and out on the radio when I had signals. But yeah, it was the go ahead two was a two run home run off of Pineda was kind of a backbreaker, and it was the difference in the game.
Yeah, he hit two run home runs, so he had the entire Seattle offense. And the one he hit in the first inning was just an absolute blast, dead center field. It was a line shot, crushed it. It got me sort of missing Robbie Cano.
Well, I think this leads to your point, right? And I hope people in Seattle are listening so you guys can talk complete trash to Andrew after you listen to this. But this just proves how miserable he is in Seattle, because when he comes home, all he does is hit. He comes back to New York and he just starts hitting the ball because he, you know, the stadium lines up for him perfectly.
It does.
It absolutely proves that it was a really stupid baseball move for him to go out to the great abyss, the great hole in Seattle for his career. So, you know, enjoy the money, Robbie.
I really do think he could still go down in history as one of the greatest offensive second basemen ever, even playing in Seattle. But I think if he played his entire career in Yankee Stadium with the short porch and everything, I mean, you're looking at, you know, potentially 400 home runs and going down in history as probably the best hitting second baseman of all time.
He would be in the conversation, no doubt about it. And yes, staying in Yankee Stadium would have absolutely helped that. Going out to Seattle is giving him a much larger task to get to that point. So, you know, I think his numbers will dramatically drop off, especially as he starts getting older. That ballpark's just going to get bigger and bigger to him.
So Pineda did not look as sharp in this game. And potentially a reason for this is because he had 8 days rest in between starts.
Yeah, it's the second time that he's had long rest in between starts. And the first time he did not do well. Again, he obviously does not bounce back from extra rest. I mean, this guy is, you know, he needs his habits, and he's definitely a creature of them. So he's proving that, you know, he needs that standard norm, and he needs to stay on his own schedule.
So the things I saw out of him in this game, we've been talking all year about how good his strikeout to walk ratio is. It is still one of the best in baseball, but he had two walks and only two strikeouts on Saturday. He was kind of wild, not only within the strike zone, but he was falling behind a lot of hitters, wasn't able to use his off-speed stuff low in the zone for strikeouts. So, I mean, he didn't pitch bad. I mean, he gave up four runs. Cano beat him twice. So, I mean, you can't really say he went out there and got rocked, but at the same time, it was not the Pineda we've seen for the last, you know, two or three starts before this.
Yeah, and again, from the little bit I could catch on the radio was that I heard from what John and Susan were saying was that his slider was just not on at all.
Yeah, it was flat.
And it was a bad pitch, and he couldn't locate it, and it wasn't sharp. So and Susan Wallman was making some great points. And when his slider's not on, he's a completely different pitcher. So he really needs that pitch for him to succeed.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's probably his best pitch.
Yeah. Oh, it is. It's filthy when it's on.
And today they got the win, the series win. It was a 2-1 victory. All of the games this weekend were one run games.
That's good, man. Hey, winning one run games at this point in the season is phenomenal. Yeah. I will take it. I love it.
We talked about last week how they were 500 in one run games. So yeah, they're improving on that record, which is good.
That's part of the makeup of the team. I truly believe that when you have these tight games like that and you come out victorious, is it really builds the team and it really helps the team get tighter. And you know, they just get more used to situations that are, you know, that are more trying. And it's a really good thing for a baseball team in the long run.
I like this team in one-run games, especially at home, because not only their nasty bullpen, but also their home run potential.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, you said it perfectly. That's exactly the reason.
All right, CC pitched well today. 6 innings, 7 strikeouts, only 1 earned run, and only 1 walk. The thing that I think stood out for me is he had 6 innings. He pitched well. It was hot as balls out there today. It was like 95 degrees in the Bronx. And Joe didn't push him. He only had 87 pitches, but Joe went out there. He after the sixth inning, you know, good job, big guy. You know, let the bullpen, you know, get this game for us, and I think that's what the Yankees are going to start They're going to need to start doing that with CeCe in the second half. Don't push him past that six-inning threshold. We've seen it in the beginning of the season. He does not respond to it.
And we don't need to. With the way that our bullpen is structured and the depth that we have in the bullpen, with 8 and 9 locked down, and we have, you know, multiple people that could come in and pitch that seventh inning, we have the depth that who can do that. And we have guys that Girardi trusts. It's a great point. Keep him at 6 innings. If he's doing well outside that, even when his pitch count was where it is today, get him out of there, and enjoy the rest of the game, kid. And we got this because our bullpen's filthy. So good for CeCe. That was a really good outing. 7 strikeouts in 6 innings, only 1 run and 1 walk. I'll take that every single time. And then, you know, twice on Sunday because that's exactly that's what we want from him.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it earlier. The Seattle offense as a whole is not great. They're 14th in the league in runs scored, so they're pretty much at the bottom of the league. But, I mean, anytime you can get that kind of performance out of CeCe, you take it to the bank. And then the bullpen shut the door. Wilson, Betances, Miller combined 3 innings and only gave up 1 hit. So that's we keep saying the same thing, but that's why you feel comfortable just getting those 6 innings. So
yeah, and you know, Justin Wilson is just he's been awesome this whole year. He's really been good. He's been a great addition to this pen. So and you know, the nice thing, you can tell that Girardi's not really worried about the lefty righty matchup, because a lot of these guys in our bullpen have success against both sides of the plate, which is a huge plus. Where, because Girardi does have flexibility, then no matter what side of the what arm they're throwing with. So,
yeah, that's a great point. Shreve and Wilson have been effective against both, so definitely a weapon out there. And Beltran, in his first day off the DL, got a big hit off King Felix to tie the game in the sixth, and then Teixeira had a clutch go ahead home run in the eighth. And that was the whole offense.
Do we still have to call him King after we've beaten him twice in a row and just like just demolished him the first time? I feel like I'm not gonna call him King anymore. He's just Felix to me. Maybe Felix the cat. Like, you know, he's getting lower, and I'm liking it.
I don't want to stir the pot. Yeah, I don't want to stir the pot.
Okay, I'm knocking on wood right now. Yeah, I just knocked on. So, but yeah, no, it's good to see Beltran. You know, look, if you look at his numbers, they're actually not that terrible. It doesn't feel like he's done anything this whole year. So hopefully he can come back and contribute a little bit to this team, and especially on the offensive side. I mean, he's always been able to hit. So hopefully he comes back and healthy, and this rested him some good, and he can get hot in the second half.
All right, two things that annoyed me from this series, because you know I can't just have a nice weekend win series. I got to find a couple things that piss me off. Vidal Nuño, I don't know if you remember him, but he was...
Oh, I remember Nuño. I remember him very well.
Yep. He sucked for the Yankees last year, and they ended up trading him at the deadline last year. But he faced 8 batters in this series and got all 8 out.
Yeah. He loves New York. You know, he was one of those guys, I think, that had some awesome pictures where he would go out and go clubbing in New York. He was like a big... He used to go out a lot in Manhattan. So I think he loves New York and he relishes it, and he was looking forward to it. So I don't know. Like, I don't really take, I know you look into this and you get mad about seeing these guys come back and do
well. Because he sucks. He sucks.
Yeah, he does, but he had a good day. He had a good series. So good for him. And we beat them 2 out of 3. I'm happy.
And another Yankee, ex-Yankee who now kills the Yankees, is Austin Jackson. I feel like everywhere he goes, he hits the Yankees, and only the Yankees, because he's a career like 262 hitter. And he's batting over 300 against the Yankees in his career.
Yeah, and he's a guy who I guess the Yankees saw what he was going to be, because I think a lot of people thought he was going to be a lot better than he is. But, I mean, he's had a couple good streaks. Come on. That was the Phil Koch deal, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, so they traded Austin Jackson and Phil Koch to Detroit. To Detroit. And then they got back Curtis Granderson.
Right. So, you know... at that time, I think we made out on the move because Grandy was good for at least the first year we had him. But yeah, Austin Jackson just kind of turned into a decent player. But yeah, he came back and had some good hits, right? He was trying to stick it to him. He didn't like it. He didn't like the trade. He wanted to be this Yankee starting center fielder. Sorry, man, pal.
Don't we all?
Yeah, don't we? We do.
All right, so that was a good weekend series, and they got 3 coming up against Baltimore, who's currently in second place, as we mentioned. So It's at home against Baltimore. You win that series again, and you keep putting distance between you and second place.
Dude, let's bury Baltimore. I want to bury them badly. They're one of those teams that I've just... When I was a kid, I used to go to Memorial Stadium a lot, too. My stepmother is from Baltimore, so we would drive down and go to Memorial. And so I used to see a lot of Yankees Orioles games in Baltimore. So they're one of those teams that I just want to bury.
Jesus, you went to Memorial Stadium?
Quite a few times. I actually have been there. I went to Yankee Orioles games in Memorial probably like 30 times. Like, I went there a lot.
You're showing your age.
That's all right. I'm like a fine wine, baby. That's what I'm telling you. History of baseball. It's important. I gotta make sure that you guys all know about these things. That Camden Yards was not the only place that they played baseball.
Have you been to Camden?
Oh yeah, of course. It's been beautiful. There. My brother used to live in Baltimore, actually. So we used to go to Camden a lot. I mean, when the Orioles were bad 5-6 years ago,
yeah,
we used to get tickets like four rows back from the dugout for like $7.
I know.
I remember we would go and like literally pay $7 because he was in school. So we would like use his student ID, pay $7 for some like a bad seat, and then we would just move up because nobody was there and nobody cared. So yeah,
you could get $4 seats to a weekend game, you know, at Baltimore for the price of like one upper deck seat at Yankee Stadium.
So the closest foul ball home run, the closest ball I ever had was at Memorial. I think I was like 10 years old. I'll never forget this. It was Larry Sheets. Larry Sheets, who played for the Orioles at the time, hit a home run in the left field stands. And I was in the left field stands with my dad and my brother and my stepmom. And the home run landed on the in the row in front of me. And there was a kid there about the same age as me. And I jumped on this kid trying to get the ball because like that's all I cared about was getting that ball. I just needed that ball. And like he did like a tuck and roll and like I couldn't get to it. And then I got in so much trouble for like jumping on this kid. I'll never forget like my dad laid into me for like jumping on this kid. And then the kid was like bragging about having the ball for like 3 innings out of it. He just made me so mad.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it sounds like he was a veteran of the foul ball. Because that no, might be – is he now – did he grow up to be foul ball guy who caught Aaron Rodgers' home run?
Yeah, he might have. He might be that kid, actually. Yeah. You're right. He might be that guy. So, if I see that kid in an alley, he's done.
All right, so that kind of wraps it up for the week because there were only three games. Not a ton of stuff to talk about, but we did get a little bit angry about Ref Snyder. Hopefully we see him back soon because
– We better see him back soon.
Because I think we're both in agreement that – It was just more. It was the step in the right direction for this team, you know, mixing the old with the new, in first place, getting some young blood in there. I loved it. Hopefully, we can get that going again soon. But we got three versus Baltimore and then three at Minnesota this week, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.